FlightBridge Ed Live and online courses are even better now that they're powered by iSimulate. With Reality 360 providing powerful monitor and ventilator simulations, students don't have to imagine anymore, they can engage. Now, with the brand new CTGI module, students can train with highly advanced and realistic fetal heart rate simulations. Just another example of FlightBridge Ed and iSimulate being your partner in discovery. Check out iSimulate.com for more information.
This is Second Shift.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Second Shift. Mike Verkest, Ritusani, back at it again, anxiously awaiting what fresh hell September 2020 will bring us. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. You know? Yeah, do you feel like in your mind when you ask somebody how they're doing or when you respond to that question, you have to qualify it with, you know, given all that's going on, the world sucks. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's world exploding. I'm about as good as could be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Since how the world is going to hell in a handbasket. But the VMAs were on tonight. It is Sunday, August 30th. I don't know if you got a chance to catch that. The Video Music Awards.
I missed that.
And I got to tell you, the only people I really recognized was Lady Gaga. Oh, and Eminem.
Ah.
Other Detroit than that. Boy. Yeah, I couldn't tell you. Oh, The Weeknd. So I'm being a little facetious. All right. So most of the acts, I have no idea who they are. But apparently Lady Gaga is winning awards still. The Weeknd is winning awards still. Eminem's winning awards still. I have no idea. The rest of the people
had like new stuff out.
Yeah, apparently there is. I don't know. But I didn't even know the VMAs were a thing still.
I saw you post a picture of Lady Gaga and her mask.
Yes. And for those of you watching, let's see if I can pull it up. So if you're watching our video podcast, yes, you probably are. There she is wearing her mask. It's probably not that great.
Yeah, it's not that great. You can see the horns coming out of it.
Yeah, at least you can see the horns. So yeah, the post was, if, you know, Gaga can wear a face covering, then maybe you should too.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So it's been a long weekend. So it's Sunday. You know, I'm off on Fridays, but I worked all day Friday. Today, Sunday, I have gotten two PowerPoints complete for actually a training that you're going to help me with. You probably don't even know that hit your inbox.
I just saw it.
So I've got two of those done. I put 7 bags of clothes into my car for the Goodwill. So I went and did that. Moved a bunch of furniture around, which turns out you did the same.
I did the same today.
So we're just getting shit done, man. I mean,
well, you know, one of the early quarantine things was everybody was moving their furniture, and we didn't do that. Although we did move the furniture, we did change around our family room, move all the furniture there. But no, we decided to the mother-in-law lives with us, and she wanted to switch bedrooms, be farther down the hall from us. Now that the kids are both out, and be kind of in her own space.
Yeah.
A mere 2 steps from the bathroom.
It's a little thing
that required us to move. And then Janet wanted to take the old mother-in-law bedroom and make it more more office-y.
Okay.
And we had to That made us move our, because I have my own, I have an office downstairs.
Yes, you do. You're in it at this very moment.
I am in it that just this minute. And then Janet uses various desks around. She never sits at my desk, but as an office for like some of her volunteering things that she does, that sort of thing.
She's a traveling worker.
But she lands. So that meant that we had to move, like, to do that, we had to move stuff in from 3 bedrooms, basically. Like swap 3 bedrooms and like all rotate them over 1 bedroom.
Well, I'm glad you lived to tell the story.
Most importantly, usually in this kind of situation, the wife and I bicker a lot. Oh. And we didn't very much. Not till the end.
Well, that's good. Keep it civil.
That's right. Well, you know, it's our anniversary tomorrow. We had to.
Congratulations. 29 years.
29 years.
Man.
That means, you know, our marriage is probably older than most of our listeners.
Probably true.
That's true. Yeah, 29 years.
Yeah, it'll and, be 27 for my wife and I just a couple weeks from now.
I know.
We were talking about that.
Maybe right? When you got married.
Yeah. It's going to be a little race. We're on a race to 50. Let's just go with 30, though, start with. So you're going to have a big party for 30th. We're going to invite all the listeners, all the second shifters. Come down. We're going to have a big party.
You know, we'll have, by then, hopefully, we'll be able to have allowed to have stadiums again. So we'll have a stadium party.
We would need the stadium party. So many listeners. So good. But speaking of stadiums, I guess that's not really about the stadium, but it's about the gathering. Let's talk about the situation. All right, the cure of the week. This week,
convalescent blood plasma.
Yes, convalescent plasma.
Yeah. So that means that they take blood from somebody who recently had the COVID-19
situation.
And then sort of filter out the plasma. And then that plasma has in it antibodies that were supposed that the person who had the coronavirus created. And then they transfuse that plasma into another person
I like the way you said transfuse.
Well, that's what they do.
I know, but it was just cool the way it sounded.
Oh, that's cool.
All right. And so they did this with a bunch of people and they found what?
Well, they found apparently enough to grant an emergency use authorization for this to be standard therapy. And because medicine's gone fucking bonkers.
Yes.
That meant that there had to be a presidential press conference about it. And the data that this EUA was based on was what is called a preprint. So it was put out there by the researchers, and they're from Mayo. It's not a slouchy institution,
right?
But it was put out before peer review, and
there's been a lot of that since the situation started.
Yeah, that's apparently we now do medicine by press conference.
Isn't that kind of like so? You're the right guy to answer the question. So. Why has this become a thing? Because I don't imagine that pre-printed, pre-reviewed, pre-anything 2 years ago.
6 months ago.
6 months ago, that just didn't really happen, did it? Like,
nope.
Like things would be embargoed. Things would be like being reviewed. This was not a thing 6 months ago.
Most of the places that you reputable places that you could publish in would say you're not allowed. You haven't part of the deal is you haven't shared this with anybody yet. Now you can share your research as an abstract in a like in a research conference.
Sure,
and that's prior to peer review. But the point there is to report something that you think is interesting. But also to get feedback. A big part of when you present a paper at a conference, the questions that get generated, if you're a good author and a good scientist, you're listening to those questions so that you can answer them in part of your discussion or in your paper, or even, you know, look at your analysis and make sure that you accounted for those things.
Yeah.
But this idea of writing the paper and then putting the draft on a website and then saying, you!
Full send this shit. Let's go.
And I think that just comes from, I think the reality is that we are taking this process that for any, how long have we been studying cardiac arrest?
Long time.
I believe the inaugural lighthouse project was about epinephrine from 1901 or 1910, right?
1900, yeah, I think it was 1902.
Yeah.
The dogs. Yeah, the whole nine. Yeah,
don't let Jarvis know we're talking about him, but
he'll know. But, he loves it.
But they're taking the problem is you're trying to take this scientific process and compress the time. I mean, people are talking about giving an EUA to vaccinations before they finish phase three trials. And that's not how we do science, but there is.
It is now in 2020, buddy.
What?
It's how we do it in 2020, buddy.
Yeah.
Get used to it.
Problem that you end up with is because everybody's looking for that thing that will work.
Yes, they are.
And save everybody's life and allow us to go to football games, which you can apparently do in the South, but is the thing, you know, that's what everybody wants. And I think that's what's driving it. It's not just sort of politics, but it's this really overarching desire to get this thing taken care of. Well, we can talk about, you know, plasma and the data that it's based on.
Yeah,
but we shared it with, you know, you and I talked about it already, and Jeff, you, me, and Jeff, is we like to send our papers to each other and like, here's some reading for you.
Yeah,
you know, and unfortunately, it may play a role, but the data that they base it on is, I don't think, particularly powerful. There was no placebo arm. I mean, how do you say something is better than nothing if there's no nothing? But in this paper, there was no placebo. There was low dose, low antibody plasma and high antibody plasma, and more morbidity and mortality seemed to be better if they got a higher dose of antibodies, but there was no placebo.
Seems like, well, again, I'm not some kind of crazy researcher here, but why wouldn't, if they were already going to do a low, a high, what's the harm in just throwing a placebo in there? Like, that would just strengthen whatever results they come up with, like by a bajillion. So why not just do it? Does it take more time? You need more patience, or is it back to that?
I think you need more patience, but I also think they wanted to get this therapy out there under sort of a research protocol.
Yeah.
And they basically created these research protocols so they could do. I mean, I know where I work, we were doing this, and it was all under the same research project. There were a lot of patients enrolled, but the kind of purpose was to enroll people to be able to give them plasma instead of necessarily wanting to do a placebo-controlled trial. That's how I read it. I certainly haven't talked to any of the authors.
Yeah.
You know, there we did, when we were talking about it, we did pull up, there was a randomized control blinded placebo controlled trial that showed no difference in outcome between plasma and placebo, but that was also done, you know, in China with 200 patients.
Yeah.
It was a very small study. It was early in the pandemic, in the situation, excuse me.
Thank you.
And I think it's hard to take that with a grain, you know, to take that to mean much. But there's, again, been no randomized control placebo trial for plasma that showed that it was a benefit to morbidity or to mortality.
Well, enough about plasma.
Well, the CDC says that nobody's dying of it anyway, that it's all
right here. Fake. Right here. Only 9,000 patients died from COVID.
That's right. Was it like 9,154 or something like that?
9,210.
9,210.
Yes. So Mike V's getting tagged in post. Hey, bro, you seem like you're keeping up on this stuff. What do you make of this? Because if you go onto the CDC website, it's like, you know, 150, 170,000 people. What's going on, man? The government's playing games.
Yeah, it's a big game. It's all a big plot. And, you know, no, that's not correct. And I think like most situations, that there's overblown shit, and then there's the other end, which is to minimize it. And there's a lot of, you know, we've talked about this with hydroxychloroquine. There's just a lot of fake information out there. And I think, again, it's because people want to glom onto something that says that we can return back to normal life. And, you know, we've talked about whether or not it's political or what have you, and where do my politics lie? I can, look, we've talked about it. I'm like a leftist, right?
Yes, you are. And I love you.
Do you know what yesterday was? Yesterday was the day I was supposed to go to the Michigan-Washington game in Seattle.
I know. We were supposed to have a game yesterday, too.
And well, it's just football. My wife and I, we like to go to live sports and we like to go to restaurants. Guess what I haven't done since February?
Live sports or restaurants, really, right, to speak of?
And I'm lucky because I've kept my job and I happen to be in a job that, you know, still is needed during this. And I get that. What my difficulty is pretty fucking minimum compared to somebody who lost their job over coronavirus. Yeah,
totally.
But I want this thing done as quickly as much as the next one. Yeah. I think we're going to have a really good basketball team at Michigan this year. So I want to see Michigan basketball. But they've already canceled. Michigan was supposed to come to Oregon this year for basketball. They've already canceled that. So I think that's part of it. But here's the deal. And let me share the screen. I'm on the CDC website. And what people are glomming on to is this table 3, that shows comorbidities. And what the comorbidities, and we have people who watch and people who listen. And so on the CDC website, on their sort of data page, they have a table 3 that's identified as comorbidities, and it says conditions contributing to deaths involving coronavirus disease. And this data is obtained from death certificates. And the line that I have highlighted on the screen for those of you watching is that for 6% of the deaths, COVID-19 was the only cause mentioned. And what people are arguing is that that means that only 6% of the reported deaths from COVID-19 are actually related to COVID-19. And the other 94% are due to or related to something else. Well, folks, that is just a line of shit. Yes, are most of the people who die, do they have other comorbidities? Yes, but let's look at what some of those comorbidities are. Flu, okay, so you got coronavirus and flu. That sounds like the coronavirus killed you. Oh, here's one, adult respiratory distress syndrome. What is one of the things that coronavirus causes in your respiratory system?
Acute respiratory failure.
There you go. That was one below it. Respiratory failure.
I'm sorry.
So these comorbidities are adult respiratory distress system syndrome, respiratory failure, respiratory arrest, cardiac arrest, cardiac arrhythmia. These are all things that happen with coronavirus. Sepsis. And then diabetes is listed there, but here's the point. When you are filling out a death certificate, when a physician is filling out a death certificate, we are taught to place on that death certificate any item that likely contributed to the death. So if a person has coronavirus and they end up getting intubated and then they get a bacterial superinfection and get septic, and then they have kidney failure, then on their death certificate will be COVID-19, respiratory arrest, respiratory failure, acute renal insufficiency or acute renal failure. And so what this 6% that people are talking about is in fact just the ones where the doctor was too fucking lazy to put anything else on the death certificate. So this is just another example or another possibility as to why is to people taking, trying to take this data and play with your mind. But so just don't. I'm just tired. I'm just tired of having to argue with people about stupid shit. The disease is real. It is an infectious disease. It kills people more than flu does. Let's fucking face up to it and just get knock this baby out. The other graph that I think is really interesting, and I'll stop sharing my screen in a minute, is this.
All right, hold on. I want to make sure I get this full screen. So let me go back to here. I was preparing for you to come back, but there we go. Hold on.
Yeah, the other graph that I think is really interesting, and one that you all that I think is paints a much stronger picture, is this graph of weekly number of deaths from all causes. And the thing that's really interesting is that this line, this yellow line, is the predicted number of deaths. The CDC has been pretty good looking at past data and trying to identify like how many deaths are going to happen over a period of time. And then here is, since the coronavirus hit, that we are far exceeding the predicted number of deaths. And in fact, if you do the math, this actually adds up to way more than 160,000 or 180,000. And any of the scientific reviews over the numbers around coronavirus actually pretty much guess that you are, that the numbers of deaths from coronavirus are not being overestimated, but actually underestimated. And so I think that graph is one that's pretty telling. So again, this thing is real. People die from it. It's at least 180,000 people. It's probably more. Yes, if you're old, you're more likely to die. Yes, if you have obesity or asthma or you're over 65, you're more likely to die. But it's real. And just stop with the arguments that it's not. That's all I'm asking. You know?
I think just people are so desperate to confirm whatever their beliefs are, whether it is, it's not that big of a deal. See, only 6%. See, or look at the plasma. Look how great the plasma is. People are desperate for things to go back the way they were. And so we're seeing, and the thing is with the way the news cycle is and what's going on is with whatever you believe, you can find something that's going to support that.
Right.
In it.
Unfortunately, but even if it's not really science.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like whatever it is you're looking for. It's like the University of Alabama. Here's another post that was yesterday. Did you happen to see that?
I saw their numbers.
So the post was about their numbers. And I'm going to find it. So I'm going to just build in this delay right here, because I want to find it, because it sort of cracked me up. Okay, here it is right here. Here's the post. This is literally from the school. Over 1,000 students have tested positive for COVID-19 at the University of Alabama schools since classes resumed. Fair enough. So you click on it, and then it actually, the story takes you to the University of Alabama system, which includes UAB, U of a bunch of universities that are together. Like, this is their own numbers. It's their own numbers. So the University of Alabama in Huntsville, University of Alabama in Birmingham, and of course UA. So that's the University of Alabama system.
And Huntsville, just so you know, I believe just dropped. They had an NCAA hockey team.
Oh, did they really?
No, they did. I think they just dropped it.
Well, they're not a huge player for the COVID by any means. They had 8 cases 2 weeks ago and then 2 cases last week. But both U of A and UAB have had nearly 500 cases a week since school came back together, since school started resumed. And so, like, this is their numbers. Like, there's no reason for them to lie. But there are people, person after person, not sure I believe that. The next comment was just, this was the whole comment. Wrong. That was their contribution to my post, was that it was wrong. And then I wonder how many would test positive for other viruses. Like, it's just so weird to me. Like, I mean, I don't know, dude. It's quite the situation we're in.
Yeah, it's.
The school says they have 1,000 positive cases. It didn't say anything about mass hysteria, people dying. They're just reporting their numbers, and people just can't take the numbers for what they are, because there's some thing going on with that, right? Maybe if you're listening or watching, maybe you're one of those people.
Yeah, well, you know, there's the guy who died in a car crash and had COVID, and you know, he showed up at his death certificate, they put COVID-19, and
yeah,
that immediately means that 150,000 of these people are that guy.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that case is that case appears to have happened once, but everybody knows about it. But I think questioning all data is good.
Sure.
I think that there, with anything we do, there's a garbage in, garbage out piece. But we know that this thing can overwhelm a healthcare community. And just stop it. Stop ignoring that fact.
Yeah.
You know, and people are dying from it because of it. And that, you know, and I posted probably a couple of weeks ago that for me, what's frustrating and just borderline infuriating is that people think that I would make shit up and let people die just for political reasons. That's the worst thing that's what people are accusing doctors of doing. You know, oh, the hospital gets $30,000 more dollars if you call COVID-19. Right. COVID-19. Like, I have no, the hospital gets a shit ton more money if the patient goes to the ICU. That's a big part of it. If they get intubated, but I get it, but nobody's told me to call things COVID-19 that aren't. And I will tell you that I've had patients who tested negative that I'm sure as shit sure that died of COVID-19. You know, the dude who I intubated, who three roommates had COVID-19, and then he didn't, his test was negative, and then he died. He fucking had COVID-19.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he might not have shown up. He might not show up in the data, depending on the person who fills out the death certificate. Yeah. So just stop. It's not fake. It's real. And understand that the best way to survive COVID-19 is to not get it.
Seems fairly straightforward.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think the ethics and morality of doing things that will cause a disease to spread during a worldwide pandemic, you need to think about that. If I'm going to partake and do something that will actually increase the spread of a disease causing a pandemic, where's the ethics in that? You know, we claim to be ethical, moral people. Act like it. That's all.
Is that it?
I think that's it.
That was good. That was good. All right, we're going to jump into ketamine.
Ketamine.
All right, our old friend ketamine is back in the news. Back in the news. Still in the news, I should say.
Yeah.
And this time, as EMS1.com reported, that the Aurora Council member, his name is Curtis Gardner, proposed to ban ketamine. That's what the headline said. City councilman proposes to ban ketamine. Of course, you gotta actually open up the story. And I know this is going to strike some people as strange, but you got to open up the story and sort of read it a little bit, right? Because there's more info, generally speaking, within the story than just the headline.
Absolutely.
As in this case, what happened to me is I'm like, ban ketamine for 30 days while they're investigating kind of some crazy shit that's going on with the use and administration of ketamine. That makes a little bit more sense than the council going to ban ketamine.
Yeah, I mean, politicians shouldn't practice medicine.
No. Oh, I know. We can talk about that. But this isn't a new thing. And this actually goes back to at least last summer, mm-hmm. if not a little bit longer. And that is some questionable use of ketamine, sort of maybe not exactly within the protocol, maybe some talking about it between agencies. Hey, what do you think about this? I think this guy would be good for some ketamine. Sure.
Right. I think it's a perception. Yeah, I think a lot of it is perception. I think a lot of it is behavior that can be misinterpreted. But it's a place, I mean, you know, it's a place where the political narrative is moving into medicine and causing issues. And I think that's a big part of it. In the background on this case kind of ties in with, you know, we talked about the world being on fire and we talked about a bunch of stuff going on these days, and this kind of fits right in. And I think one thing, you know, I just finished working on the chapter for the NAMSP textbook, which Norm Dinerman wrote the original, and I was adding a bunch of advocacy stuff to it, but talks about politics again, and in politics, not in the sense of the political parties in that way, but navigating politics of people and working with people. Mm-hmm. And this is one where we have not seized the story. And I've said frequently that data doesn't move people, stories do. And the story in this situation that's driving this, it's hard to make us look good. And we have to figure out a way to explain the difference or explain what happened in a way that is scientific but believable. Yeah. And I don't think we're winning that argument right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we talked about it, but this ties a lot of, this is in Aurora, Colorado, and this ties to the Elijah McClain case. And Elijah McClain was a Black man who was, for whatever reason, in an altercation with the police. And where the politics start is, how did they get there? Right? How did they get there? But where it ended is with EMS arriving on the scene and giving ketamine to this person.
And sort then of having, based on a suggestion?
Yeah. Well, so the reporting is that, and then we'll go, you know, when you go, we've talked about this 2 or 3 years ago, when we talk about Minneapolis.
Absolutely.
Our friend John Ling and what happened there. But there was the perception, or it seemed to be from the video, that the police had suggested to the EMS providers that maybe this person would, that ketamine would be a good choice. And so now the police, are they practicing medicine? And what has grown out of that perception wrongly is this idea that EMS is giving ketamine and in aiding police to make an arrest, to the point where the American Society of Anesthesiologists and the American College of Emergency Physicians came out with a statement saying that they do not support the use of ketamine in assisting police, which on its face value makes, it's not a, yeah, sure. But from the kind of underneath that, there's either two things. One, I don't believe EMS was, well, I can't imagine that we were, that somebody in EMS was giving somebody ketamine and then handing them off to the police for an arrest.
Right.
That's not happening anywhere. And if that is, then that's a fucking problem.
Right. Of course.
But this idea that the police are telling EMS that you should give this thing or that thing or ketamine. But, and then the other problem has come out that ended up with that is that the American Society of Anesthesiologists who, you know, God bless them, they believe that if it makes you at all sleepy, that they're in charge of it. Right. That's their go. Oh, if it makes you a little sleepy, it's our shit. Well, you don't use that shit anywhere except in a place where you can do your fucking crossword while the guy hasn't eaten anything. So they waded in and they didn't think ketamine had a use in the pre-hospital environment based on nothing, but you know, they're doing Sudoku in the back room. And then some psychiatrist weighed in saying that he didn't believe that excited delirium
even existed.
He can't find the fucking emergency department in his hospital, but he doesn't. And again, it's all stories, right? So we lost the story. We lost the narrative. Because I think ketamine absolutely has a role in excited delirium. And I believe that excited delirium exists and that people die from it. And you know, I can tell you, I mean, I'm the medical director of this leftist communist pinko is the medical director of a police department. I have conversations with my police chief all the time about making sure nobody gets hurt in police custody.
Yeah.
Because they don't want that to happen. And I mean, I get calls from him when he's like, you know, this person that we had was a risk to themselves and others. We felt it was mental health. And we called EMS to come help and take the person to the hospital. And we were just really worried that it took too long because we were using Geodon at the time for this, the medication to work. And we were worried that the person was going to, you know, I think that part of it is the current narrative around how they got to the point where the person was being restrained. It's really hard to separate that piece from what happened at the end and then the role in the middle where it appears that police may have asked or may not.
Yeah.
You know, I think, but I, you know, again, it's how do you seize control of the story? How do you tell the story in a way? You know, and it starts with being really remorseful when somebody dies. I mean, that's what people are missing in all this shit. People are dying. Express some sympathy and remorseful. No matter what happened.
Yeah. It's not funny.
And we just need to acknowledge that. But politicians should not practice medicine as a whole. So that's the problem here.
Do you think is this the chicken or the egg thing? Is the fact that EMS has lost the narrative on this story, is that why all of a sudden now the politicians feel they need to get in and do something because they feel like nothing's being done about it? Like, do you think if there would have maybe been a better job of getting out in front of this right after it happened, we wouldn't be having council members suggesting a 30-day ban on an EMS medication? Or
I think part of it has to do with what, I mean, part of it is what's happening today. And so this story became a much bigger story after George Floyd. Right. And so I think that piece of the narrative, that was already, here was a person who got caught up in police violence and I'm trying not to be judgmental as to how they got there. Right. Have my own views, but where we lost the story was they went from here to the police violence piece. This person died. In the middle was EMS giving ketamine. And we didn't tell that story very well. And I don't know that I think it was a hard story to get out in front of.
Yeah.
But I think where we are today, if you're going to sit there and say, well, the science says this and not acknowledge what the how the story is driving it, I think you're losing the battle. You have to recognize why this is an issue and acknowledge that there are people who are upset about this. Yeah. And not put that off and just try to be the cold scientist and say, well, you know, we think this blah, blah, blah. And then I think we also got to remember that you're always on camera. I think that's the other piece.
Yeah, that was the piece we just talked about that in the last episode, since you were out dicking off, since you weren't here. I had to record it with
playing golf with my son. Thank you.
Whatever. But we talked about EMS body cameras in that episode, because I know you know that, because I'm sure you listened.
I did listen.
Oh, you did? Okay, good. Yeah.
I mean, Eric's awesome.
I didn't think, you know, you would be watching Mr. Excitement and I on this thing.
I would say that Eric and I are very different in how we...
You are, for sure. But anyway, but we talked about that. So body, I mean, I feel like I would be all in on body cameras in EMS. That's just,
well,
that's,
remember the case from North Carolina where they dropped that we presented and you were furious. I was at least willing to hear like the argument or the reasoning from the people. Then I was going to fire them, but, you know, the case where the mental health patient got dropped off at the gas station. Yeah. The only reason we had all that was because there was a police officer there and we had his body cam.
I know.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, now granted, here's the thing. Like, if you don't run calls no more, right? I'm an administrative guy. I'm a training guy. I'm not out on the front lines, just the way it is. So maybe my perspective is a little bit different, but I just don't see nothing bad coming from body cameras in EMS. That's just my thought. I mean, could it go bad? Could there be bad administrative? Of course, there could be some things, but I'm just saying, like, I just feel like there would be so much more benefit to our providers out there.
We have people who like to yell accountability and unacceptable up and down. But then that's the point of body cams for police, is accountability.
Yeah.
And it would add accountability. I think, you know, we know from our friends in Seattle that the voice recording helps documentation.
100%.
Having cameras do the documentation, you and I have talked about this. Mm-hmm. I think the benefit there, then we can all know what actually happened to the patient and do things like take better care of future patients.
Yep.
And be able to educate and, you know, if we really know what happened, we can give feedback and learn rather than, you know, what somebody documented to save their ass. Not that people lie on charts. I'm not going to call people that because I don't believe that. I mean, I'm sure somebody does and they're assholes, but the vast majority of people, you know, 99.9, they don't lie, but they certainly don't have all the information. I mean, our friend Danny Davis has demonstrated that, right? Mm-hmm. You don't look inside the monitor at what sats were, you don't really know what the sats were. and it's not, you know. So I kind of get that. I just wish we could improve documentation with it, not just
using. Yeah. Well, I mean, in the places that have rolled these out, and I'm sure you caught this, but the places that have implemented body cameras in EMS, they don't allow the crew to have access to them to aid in doing their documentation. So, I guess I see the pros and the cons of that, but I guess it would be all in the way you implement these things and the way it would work. Yeah. But just at first blush, I mean, I love the idea.
Yeah. I think the key difference is that a police officer can, in the, you know, again, all the shit going on aside, it is possible for a police officer to kill someone and be as part of their job and have it be an appropriate action. Now, I think that line we're realizing is way too simple or whatever. Mm. But if if you can kill somebody, the level of accountability should be high. Right? So that's, I think, the subtle difference between that and EMS. But I do, I think it's accountability. I mean, it creates a level of accountability. And that was, so what happened in Minneapolis with ketamine was, again, so they were studying ketamine.
Yep.
They have great experience with ketamine. They're one of the sites that have sort of demonstrated to the rest of us that ketamine is a safe and effective drug in excited delirium and severe agitation. But they, and we appropriately rely on police for safety when somebody is kind of over the top agitated. And what they saw, so the way this all went down is an accountability group was reviewing body cam footage as part of their sort of standard kind of oversight over police. And they saw on these tapes, police suggesting to the EMS that maybe you ought to give this person ketamine. And that created the firestorm. And that was a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was a big political mess. And I, you know, John Ling, I love him, but he and I were talking a lot through this and he was getting very frustrated because the media was running with a story. And again, they didn't get out front of the story. So a lot of it is getting out front of the story, and a lot of it is acknowledging sort of issues. But on a perfectly scientific basis, I nothing's really changed in my mind. I think ketamine is safe and effective. I think we all need to make sure. I think we all need to look at our agitated patient protocols and make sure that our documentation is correct and that we're we are monitoring people appropriately and we're using it appropriately. I mean, I think that's what you need to do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, hey, great talk, man. It was good. We had a couple other topics, but you know, we wanted to keep it a little bit shorter this time. You know, we've been running like an hour and a half on these, which, you know, it's cool. If you've got like a 45-minute commute, you can hit it on the way there and hit the rest on the way back, but let's just chill.
Yeah.
Let's just chill.
Got to watch Lovecraft Country's on now. I got to watch that. I don't know what
that is, but sounds like you're super attached to it.
It's a new thing. Just episode 3.
Okay.
Very excited. It's very good. I'm enjoying Netflix it. Or? What?
Is this Netflix or?
No, it's on HBO.
Oh, okay.
It's a new HBO series, kind of horror, science fiction-y, but also a little bit of history, a little bit of talk about sort of white supremacy and black life. And yeah, it's kind of interesting. Wow. Yeah.
That's quite the mix of topics there.
It is. And, you know, it's got some good acting and Journey Smollett. She's beautiful. So it's always nice to look at her.
What's the name?
Lovecraft Country.
No. The actress you were just talking about?
Journey Smollett.
Never heard of
her. Her brother was the one who like faked getting beat up.
Oh yeah. I remember that. She was on
Friday Night Lights, which we loved.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We're still watching. Well, myself, we started, Criminal Minds about like season 7, finished that out. And now we started back over and we're back on like season 3. So that's what we've been doing. Good stuff.
We just kind of finished watching a bunch of different things. So we're trying to figure out what to watch next, like on the binge side. Like we watched all of Better Call Saul, except for the last season. Oh, it's so good. Bob Odenkirk's amazing. Hmm. You watched it, right?
Never seen it. No. I know it was a spinoff of what?
Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad, right.
Yeah. And we watched all of Breaking Bad.
I tried watching that. I just couldn't get into it.
Oh, well, we one of the last trips we took before the situation was to Albuquerque.
Oh, right.
And we felt like we should watch Breaking Bad.
And you did.
And we did. And then there was a candy store right next to our hotel that all had all of this Breaking Bad paraphernalia. And so we were like, and we went in there and she's like, do you like Breaking Bad? And I'm like, well, we actually haven't watched it. Oh, you have to watch it. And we couldn't figure out why this candy store was so into it. And so we kept looking for it. Whole thing, never saw it. And then we found out later that the lady who owns a candy store, she, all the methamphetamine, all the blue methamphetamine.
She made it?
She made it. She was making, she made it for the store, she made it for the production. It was candy. It was rock candy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, I would, so that was great. What did we just watch? Oh, you want a lighthearted comedy? Do you want to know what I'm?
Lay it on me.
Netflix, Kim's Convenience.
Okay.
Canadian sitcom, 22 minutes each episode.
Love that.
It's about a Korean family in Toronto, and they own a convenience store. It's Mr. Kim, and the actor that plays Mr. Kim, Paul Sun Hung Young Lee, has some of the best comic timing I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
What's
it called again? Kim's Korean?
Convenience.
Kim's Convenience.
Yeah. And they have like 5 seasons on Netflix, and we just watched all of it. Like, we were before those days where you're tired.
Yeah.
Where you're like, you know, I have
easy.
It's just easy and it's fun, funny, but it's a sitcom, right? So it's like 22 minutes, everything's wrapped up.
Yeah.
And so I would watch that. Yeah. And then Cobra Kai just came to Netflix.
I watched the first few episodes.
How was it? I heard it was.
Here's the thing. It came out on YouTube.
Right.
That was like a YouTube
2 years ago.
Yeah, it was like a YouTube thing. What do I think? I don't know. Is it blood from a turnip? Like, I think they're trying to just get. I mean, I love the premise. Kind of cool, you know. Johnny's
Danny's not the good guy, right?
Well, so far, I've only watched a couple episodes. So Johnny's a loser. You know, he got knocked out, right?
Yeah.
Daniel whacked him with the swan kick or whatever that was. And it basically picks up from there. This is very dramatic. Like, he's laying on the mat.
The crane.
The crane. He's laying on the mat, knocked out by Daniel San. And the camera pans back out. And then it picks up Johnny like 30 years later, passed out on the carpet with his booze all around him. He's living in the same building in Reseda that Daniel lived in when they moved there. And so there's a lot of homage, obviously, back to the good old days where he was the All Valley champion and how his life has just gone to shit. And everywhere he turns, he sees Daniel as this like very famous and successful business guy, owns a bunch of car dealerships.
Right.
And then here it comes. He's going to get a piece of pizza. Johnny is at a convenience store next door to his apartments. And there's this kid in there who's his neighbor who he doesn't want to talk to or deal with. And he starts getting picked on by a bunch of older kids.
Uh-oh.
Yes. So very reminiscent of what him and his gang did to Daniel when he was
in town.
So he goes and intervenes. And this kid's like, oh my God, you got to teach me. Teach me this. What did you call it? Karate. Teach me karate. He's like, you don't even, who cares? Like, forget it. So he's a real a-hole. And anyway, so he gets compelled, gets some money, and he reopens Cobra Kai. And Daniel sees this. Can't believe it.
Yeah. Like, he
can't believe that this murderous, torturous, evil Cobra Kai is back in business. And that's as far as I've gotten.
Yeah.
I don't really know yet. It's just they're trying really hard. You know, they're trying really hard to get that, capture that Karate Kid sort of feeling. And yeah, we'll see.
It's like Daniel's kind of smarmy, right? Like, he's not, you don't really like him in this, or is he fine?
So far, he's fine.
Okay. And there's the two. So Ralph Macchio, and I can't remember the actor who plays Johnny.
Yeah.
They came up with this idea together. So they're the executive producers on the show.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting because I'm like, oh yeah, I guess they don't hate each other in real life.
Yeah, probably not in real life. But just so you know, if you buy a car from Daniel's lot, you get a free bonsai tree.
Oh.
Yes.
I've always wanted a bonsai tree. Yeah.
Or as he calls it, a bonsai.
Bonsai.
Yes. Anyway, all right, let's wrap this up. On behalf of Dr. Ratu, Sonny, Mike Verkest, you've been listening to and watching The Second Shift. We are a proud member of the Flatbridge Ed Podcast Network and
a Fire Dog Production.
We will see you guys on the next one. Take care.